From India's largest newsroom, I'm Meenal Bagheel, and this is the Times of India podcast.
No need to panic. But there is a need to be prepared and to be responsible and to be disciplined. And here, we must follow the restrictions and the rules that different state governments will impose.
On the last day of 2021, India's Ministry of Health said that there were over 10,000 cases of COVID-19 being detected daily across the country. That number is expected to rise very quickly, driven by the highly transmissible Omicron variant of the virus and much greater social activity after months of low cases. The central government urged people not to panic, but also not to be irresponsible. Multiple states imposed curbs on New Year's Eve celebrations and have started clamping down on activities. Schools have been shut and offices have been asked to function at half capacity in multiple states. But if the virus variant is much milder than the previous ones, what's the cause for worry? Are children at greater risk with this variant, with reports of more children being admitted to hospitals in the US? Also, for the first time, there's a drug approved for the treatment of COVID patients. How much will that help? To answer these questions and more, Times of India senior editor Rema Nagarajan spoke with Dr. Lancelot Pinto. Dr. Pinto is a consultant pulmonologist and epidemiologist at the PD Hinduja Hospital in Mumbai and is already seeing a stream of COVID patients suspected to have been infected by the Omicron variant. In this interview, he explains when he expects this wave to peak, why one shouldn't take this variant more lightly, and what are the long-term lessons from multiple waves of COVID-19.
Are you seeing a lot of cases of hospitalization already?
We aren't seeing too many hospitalizations right now, but that typically hospitalizations tend to lag behind infections by a couple of weeks. Most of the deterioration in COVID tends to happen in the second week towards day 10 or so. And most of the initial infections in any surge tend to happen in younger individuals who are out, who are, either partying or visiting friends or going to work. When these individuals go back home and then take it to the elderly and the elderly start getting infected in about a week or two after that, that's when you tend to see the surge in hospitalizations.
With all this talk about how it's mild, that could be completely misleading.
So if you look at the analysis done by the Imperial College, they've looked at Delta versus Omicron. And I think it's a complicated analysis, but I think the bottom line was that in unvaccinated, uninfected individuals who haven't had a prior infection, both Delta and Omicron seem to be more or less similar when it comes to the disease they cause and whether they lead to hospitalizations, etc. Most individuals all over the world, at least in developed nations, are vaccinated. A significant proportion of individuals have had prior infection. We believe that both these factors, either vaccination or prior infection, offers a certain degree of immunity against moderate to severe disease, which is why Omicron might end up being a lot milder, simply because a lot of individuals have some sort of protection from prior infection and vaccination. However, the Omicron seems to be extremely transmissible. So we know that Delta was already more transmissible than Alpha. And Omicron, they're postulating is about three times more transmissible than Delta. So when you have a virus or a variant that is that transmissible, and you have, say, the entire population getting infected simultaneously, even a tiny fraction of that population, which needs hospitalization, potentially has the capacity of completely overwhelming the system. I think the other thing that also gets left out of discussions very often is the fact that, even a virus which is mild can potentially trigger off an inflammatory cascade that causes other problems. So if you look at studies which have looked at heart attacks, if you look at studies which have looked at strokes, very often there is a preceding viral infection. And within the next 2 to 6 weeks after a viral infection, you're at an increased susceptibility to developing these other organ malfunctions. So, you may not get hospitalized because of the virus itself, but the consequences of the virus could again lead to a huge surge in hospitalizations. So these are things that we need to be cognizant about before just, saying that this is a milder variant and there's nothing to worry about.
What could we possibly do to mitigate the numbers?
No matter what the variant is, the reassuring thing is that some what we call first principles have remained the same throughout the past 2 years. Masks will work no matter what the variant is. So if you're out and about, you should ideally wear either an N95 mask, which is great, or double mask if you're using a 3-ply mask, because we now know that it is airborne. Vaccination clearly across the world is protecting individuals from moderate to severe disease. So if there's anyone sitting on the fence, this is the time they need to move off it and realize that there's immense amount of data which shows that there is no doubt that vaccinations have made a difference. Boosters are going to be rolled out shortly. And I think anybody who's eligible for a booster should go ahead and get boosted. So if you're going for a booster, if you're going for a vaccination, in the midst of a surge, you must be absolutely certain that you're wearing your mask properly. You're not pulling it down to have a cup of coffee or something after the vaccination. You're not chatting with others in a way that for some reason you feel like drawing your mask down. So you need to be extremely careful while you do get your booster or your vaccine. The most important thing which we've learned time and again all over the world is, avoiding crowds, avoiding these super spreader events, So things like music concerts, things like religious gatherings, things like political gatherings. I mean, we really need to do our best to avoid that. These end up being really bad in terms of the quantum of infection being spread at one given point of time. I think vaccination and I think the basic principles of masking, sanitizing, distancing, avoiding crowds, paying attention to ventilation, I think these are the things that are really going to help slow down the spread.
A lot of people seem to think, oh, I can go for this birthday party. I can go for, because it's only 5 people. It's only 6 people. We have invited only very few people. It's just a family gathering. That would also be a complete no-no, at least for the next 2-3 weeks, right?
I mean, you're absolutely right. So somebody put out a wise tweet the other day saying that you are more likely to get infected from someone you love. All of us have this need to socialize. And, this is the time of the year where everybody wants to meet family. You're definitely more likely to get infected in a smaller gathering, because smaller gatherings tend to be indoors. There always tends to be food and drink involved, which is not possible without lowering your masks. So I think caution is warranted. Nobody is enforcing a harsh lockdown. Nobody is saying this is going to be indefinite. So the whole fear is that everybody can't get infected at the same time. No, it's okay that everybody gets infected, I guess. This seems to be that kind of a variant where we might not be able to completely protect ourselves. But as long as it's spread over time, we'll be fine.
Despite your vaccination status, despite getting a booster, I guess it all boils down to some sort of, being careful when you're socializing as well as masking, right?
I think it's going to be very difficult to prevent an infection this time around. And our aim, rather than completely preventing infections, should be, the same first principle of flattening the curve. The secondary aim is we do know that vaccinations and boosters mitigate the severity of the infection. So, you do get infected, but you try and see that the infection is not severe.
What would happen when very large numbers get infected would be what we saw in the second wave?
That's the fear. Even if you look at Delta, at the end of the day, we know that the virus is such that it's a tiny fraction that needs hospitalization. It's an even tinier fraction that needs intensive care. But given the ratio of these hospital beds to the quantum of population or to the population denominator that we have, it's very easy to overwhelm the system. If you look at doubling time of Delta, it was much longer than the doubling time of Omicron. So even though a significant proportion of the population got infected with Delta, it still happened relatively in a longer period of time than it's likely to happen with Omicron. So Omicron, because of this 2-day doubling time, which we're already seeing, is likely to cause a more concentrated volume of people getting infected in a shorter quantum of time. So it's very easy for the hospital system or the healthcare system to get overwhelmed.
Dr. Pinto says there's an important lesson from the second wave that needs to be followed this time round. Don't over-medicate or do excessive medical tests. He also had some very important advice regarding the drug molnupiravir, which has been approved for use among COVID-19 patients.
From a physician's perspective, I think one of the messages that needs to really go out strong is that one of the biggest mistakes we did last time round, or we saw being done, was over-prescription of medications, too many CT scans being done, too many blood tests being done. We now know that most patients with COVID will do fine at home will do fine just with simple monitorings, just with simple paracetamol or management of your symptoms. When it comes to drugs, you know, the antibody cocktail is becoming very popular these days. And if Omicron turns out to be the major variant around, it doesn't seem to work. So eventually we need to update our guidelines and stop using it if Omicron turns out to be the number one cause for disease. The earlier drugs, you know, whether it's favipiravir, whether it's ivermectin, doxycycline, azithromycin, none of that works for COVID and we need to stop using it. Molnupiravir, if you look at the study that was done, I mean, it had about a 30% risk reduction in hospitalization, but the study was done among unvaccinated individuals with at least one risk factor. You know, so I think this message should not get lost. It's not supposed to be given to everybody. It's supposed to be given only to individuals who have symptoms, who are unvaccinated, and who have at least one risk factor. Secondly, even in that subset, it wasn't like a dramatic response. It was about 30% reduction in hospitalization. And remember, the study was done among those who were not vaccinated. So among vaccinated, it may or may not make a difference at all. Second thing, it has to be used within 5 days of the onset of symptoms for a course. It's a course of 5 days, which has to be used within 5 days of onset. And, you know, there are some real concerns raised about the drug, that the drug, when used indiscriminately, can actually lead to the generation of newer variants in the virus. And one needs to be very careful. It's just like you have antibiotic stewardship, where you don't want to use antibiotics left, right, and center because the virus, you know, because in the case of antibiotics, the bacteria get resistant to it eventually. It's the same thing with molnupiravir. Now, unfortunately, the drug is being pushed extremely hard left, right, and center by a wide variety of Indian pharmaceutical companies. It has the potential of becoming another favipiravir. And in terms of dissemination of information, I think we need to do our best to prevent that.
Would restrictions help? What kind of restrictions would we need? Do we need to shut down our markets? Do we need to shut down?
I don't think anybody wants a hard lockdown. I don't think it's in anybody's best interest to do that. However, you know, I think closed indoor spaces like restaurants, for example, like marriage halls, events which happen indoors, I don't think it's a bad idea to take a break for some time. You know, nobody's suggesting that this is indefinite. But, you know, given the fact, if you look at the experience in South Africa and now in the UK, it's going to be a short, sharp rise in cases followed by a sharp decline. That seems to be the general trend. And for that period, which I guess will be a month or two, if we could go easy on things where there are going to be indoor gatherings, I think that would be the wise thing to do. I think we need to go easy on outdoors, you know, because there's more and more literature suggesting that outdoor spaces do not tend to spread as much as indoor spaces. Don't have a huge music concert or something outdoors. But if people want to walk, do their groceries, things like that, I think we shouldn't be so harsh on that.
What are you hearing from your colleagues in terms of children getting infected and how they are faring?
I haven't heard of any difference in the way children are behaving this time around versus last time around. The issue, of course, again, is the same. You know, if all the children get infected simultaneously, even a tiny fraction of them needing hospitalization can overwhelm the system. And this is further complicated by the fact that children's hospitals tend to be much, much, much fewer than adult hospitals. So already the bed to population ratio when it comes to children is significantly lower than the bed to population ratio when it comes to adults. I don't think we should read too much into the system getting overwhelmed, that shouldn't lead to fear and paranoia among parents. But again, you know, this is probably a time to be a little more prudent, maybe the next month or two in terms of intermingling, etc.
You've repeatedly said that maybe we should be careful for a month or maybe 2 months. But is there that worry that, I mean, we think it is a month or 2 months and then 2 months later we have yet another variant coming up?
I think this is the time we need to start rethinking respiratory illnesses in general, right? So if you look at India, I mean, we have one of the highest rates of tuberculosis anywhere in the world, which is also spread through droplets. It's also airborne. You know, this is the time to rethink ventilation. This is the time to rethink masks in general. This is the time to, you know, start thinking about educating our kids from a very early age that if they have symptoms, they are unwell, they should mask up immediately in the interest of not spreading it to others. This is a great opportunity to start thinking in terms of the next 100 years. You know, why should we think about what's going to happen a couple of months? So overcrowding is not good for anyone in any circumstance, COVID or no COVID. Wearing masks when you're ill should be encouraged as much as possible. Ventilating our schools, ventilating indoor spaces to the best way possible is in the interests of everybody's health from a long-term perspective. I don't think we can keep going into these sudden lockdowns. I mean, there will be circuit breakers that might be needed. Whenever we see a surge, you might have a dynamic policy that keeps evolving based on what the positivity rate is, what the hospitalization rate is. So kids nowadays know that smoking is bad, right? I mean, we've started ingraining that into them from a very young age. So why can we not also start a program where we tell kids from a very young age that if you are unwell, there is no way you're going to school. And if you do, while you're recovering, you wear a mask because you need to protect those around you. Unfortunately, all over the world, I think people tend to react to situations much better than prepare for the next situation. If COVID disappears in 6 months from now, maybe everybody's going to forget all of these conversations and just move on. Despite the fact that, you know, tuberculosis will still be a big killer in India, despite the fact that COPD is the second leading cause of death in India, and gets affected by air pollution levels, gets affected by viral infections, etc. So I think it's very easy to forget all of this, but I think there needs to be a move when it comes to investing. These are not easy measures to make. To change ventilation needs a lot of infrastructural changes, sometimes needs a lot of expertise. But I think this is a great time to have that conversation.
Today's episode is produced by Arun George and Sunay Marathe. For a daily spotlight on people, ideas, and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We are available on TOI Plus, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, reach us at TOIPodcasts@timesinternet.in.